see that we have a capture for non-food uses in the bottom here, and capture for human consumption and aquaculture. And of course, global aquaculture is using a lot of this part. But it's very important that at the end we have net sustainable fish production. And clearly, during the past development of aquaculture, there has been little well-planned integration between fisheries and aquaculture in order to ensure such net sustainable fish production. Again, you know all about this. Aquaculture depends very strongly on fisheries for food, both for fish meal and the use of trash fish and other kinds of fish for consumption, also taking a stake on several steps of ecosystem services. There are other important fishery inputs to aquaculture, essentially the wild larvae, broodstock in general, and there are important implications for livelihoods in all these cases, and we cannot forget about that. Again, you have seen this picture several times during this meeting. This is Dacon and Mathian in 2008. And what is important is that the ideal view for the future is that aquaculture will grow without taking relevant stake from fisheries. So the goal really is to become net fish producers at the global level, but we also see that it's important at more local levels. And regarding aquaculture products, there are many impacts on fisheries. Of course, aquaculture biomass products for the market means income at local, regional levels, labor services that have impacts also on fisheries. There, in many cases, especially at local level, there are potential release of local fishing pressure due to alternative livelihoods. This is especially important for poor and rural communities. However, there are also potential negative impacts on fisheries due to competition for common markets, for example. There is a lowering of prices. On the other hand, there is facilitation of processing and markets and marketing, because often aquaculture brings new processing plants, new transport system, improve the quality of the products, and fisheries products go on the same line. There are other important impacts from other outputs from aquaculture, impacts from escapes, both native and exotic species, and the stocking and population enhancement on what we call culture-based fisheries. And in this regard, aquaculture input to fisheries is becoming more and more important, especially during the past 10 years. And we believe this is a very important event, and this will continue into the future. And we have to really look at this carefully. The present level of escapes is regarded by many as a problem for the future sustainability of sea cage aquaculture. But we will see in a few more minutes that this view is quite different in different regions of the world, and it really depends on the local, regional policies and objectives for development. Other outputs from aquaculture are, of course, diseases and parasites, and we have heard and we will hear about that later on today. Information available regarding escapes. It's interesting to notice, and John already mentioned some of that, that most of the information, or the largest part of the information, comes from salmon, where salmon is native and where salmon is exotic. For example, the comparison between Atlantic salmon in Norway or Atlantic salmon being cultured in Chile, where it's exotic. There is a public concern regarding local fisheries in both cases, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But do we know enough about other species, like tilapia and catfish, or any other culture species? There have been some interesting publications on tilapia, but in reality, we don't have good numbers on escapes, and there's probably a need for a global evaluation on these. On the other hand, there are perhaps less public concerns on potential impacts because there's more emphasis on socioeconomic benefits, and this is also important to be recognized. As I said, there are plenty of information on the incidents and impacts of escape, for example, of Atlantic salmon, salmon salar, and this is just one of the papers that is, again, a very thorough review done 2 years ago. The causes of escapes are also quite well known. However, the impacts can be very different in different regions. These pictures show the situation in Chile and in Norway. In Norway, you can see that there is a very clear report of losses through time, and there are a very clear evaluation of the fisheries that is catching this escape fish. In Chile, we can see here the line that shows the production. This other line, it corresponds to the other axis, shows the very slow leakage of escapes that go along the change of nets and other normal management in the farms. And these dots represent very large escape events that usually have taken place when there are big storms. A big difference between the two situations, on the one hand, is that salmon salar, when escaped in Chile, in general doesn't have any success getting into reproduction area, and there is very little evidence of that. And on the other hand, there is a very, very large local fishery on this species. This is also causing a very important argument between aquaculture and fisheries, because many poor fishermen would like to have a license and be able to fish the salmon, which would be a way to control the escapes. So this is becoming an argument for many years, but many local poor people see this as a livelihood opportunity, and these fish are sold in the market. While in Norway, of course, this is seen as a threat, especially to the sport fisheries and to all the other conservation elements that are very, very deep in the society. Other outputs of aquaculture are hatchery larvae for stocking. We can see here the seeding of Peneus vanamei in the Gulf of Fonseca in Central America, where it's being considered as a good possibility to recover the fisheries that is really being very, very strongly depressed. And so this is seen as an opportunity for the fishermen. Of course, there are ecosystem risks, and one of the problems with the stocking is that rarely there are risk assessments previous to the stocking. Culture-based fisheries, we have to recognize the very important role that is playing in many places in the world, but especially in Asia. The establishment of new fisheries in new built reservoirs, the restocking of overfished natural or artificial water bodies for subsistence and livelihoods, conservation and improvement of certain fisheries through enhancement of overfished stocks, and rebuilding of endangered species stocks. Culture-based fisheries is highly relevant for food security and livelihoods, already being practiced in many continents, but as I said, especially in Asia. In China, there are very large numbers, volumes of fisheries that are coming from seeds, in Laos, Vietnam, and Sri Lanka. There are important examples as well in Mexico and in some places in Africa. The contribution of culture-based fisheries program in Latin America, Europe, and Africa are still comparatively small to those in Asia, but they are relevant. And it's foreseen that this will play an increasingly relevant role in the short run. We have seen many reservoirs, for example, in Mexico, where people are really having a new way of accessing to fish after this possibility. There is a great potential to increase fisheries yields and outputs if, of course, adverse effects can be minimized. Stocking and culture-based fisheries and escapes might affect wild populations through the transmission of diseases, increased competition and predation, and genetic interactions that we already heard about. Of course, there are other important outputs from aquaculture that have impacts on fisheries. For example, the nutrients and shelter can produce local increases in the fisheries population. Excess nutrients and eutrophication, on the other hand, can cause fish kills and affect negatively fisheries. This is an example of a situation that is very common also in many countries where we have aquaculture. This is a farm site in southern Chile. And in aquaculture sites, fisheries is not allowed. It's not allowed even close to this site. So there is always a cause for conflicts. And you can see the mussel beds here, very close to the farm, and as you go far from the farm. And if we compare that with a site that doesn't have salmon farming, there's a lower biomass, these places without fishing. This is a very important fisheries here. And where the fishery is present, where the biomass is very, very low. Of course, we can think that there is a possibility to combine these two activities, increasing productivity and enhancing local livelihoods. Okay, all these issues, we would like to see them under this framework, the ecosystem approach to aquaculture. And I'd like to go through this very briefly. The ecosystem approach is a strategy, and it's important to consider this as a strategy for the integration of the activity within the wider ecosystem such that promotes sustainable development, equity, and resilience of interlinked social and ecological systems. We have a guidelines that is being published. It will be distributed within the next month. The ecosystem approach is guided by three main pillars. Aquaculture should be developed in the context of ecosystem functions and services. We know degradation of these beyond their resilience capacity. And the second one, aquaculture should improve human well-being and equity for all relevant stakeholders. And the third one, very important for the interaction with fisheries, is that aquaculture should be developed in the context of other sectors' policies and goals. We really need to look more at this ecosystem that we share with other users. Another important aspect of this strategy is the consideration of the different scales. The farm is the scale we most normally look at, easy to define, sometimes easy to regulate, to control, and easy to monitor. The watershed or aquaculture zone, and a major problem with the implementation with the ecosystem approach at this scale is that often they do not coincide with administrative or even national scales, and yet management is often necessary at this scale because the additional or the sum of the impacts or the effects of many farms need to be assessed, monitored, and evaluated at that scale, of course. And finally, we have all the regional and even to the global scale that require global partnerships and agreements. Here is just the view at different scales of the different spatial scales. And again, different interactions between fisheries and aquaculture take place at these different scales. Escapes, for example, take place at the farm level, but the impacts of escapes take place at least at the watershed scale. So we have to move one level up, and we do need some management conditions there. The ecosystem approach to aquaculture is based on the assessment of the ecological issues, the socioeconomic well-being, and also what we call the ability to achieve that includes governance and external impacts into the sector. We usually talk about the strategy with this scheme, so we have to look, when we have some high-level policy goal. We have to be clear about the scoping and the definition of the ecosystem boundary, which is the scale we are going to work in, and then a clear identification of issues, the prioritization of the issues, because we cannot deal with all the problems at the same time, operational objectives, implementation plan, implementation and enforcement, monitoring and evaluation, and long-term policy review. Very important to consider is that in developing the strategy and in implementing the strategy, the stakeholder participation is crucial. We need to have ownership, otherwise this doesn't work. And also we need to have the best available knowledge. The identification of issues related to aquaculture and fisheries interactions, again, can go through inputs, resource use, and outputs. I will not go through these. I will just stop 1 second on one of those. If we look at feeds, for example, impacts on fishery means impacts on the resource and on the associated socioeconomic system. We cannot separate both. And it's important to assess the risk, both environmental and social. For example, here, feeds for carnivorous fish, small pelagic fish, for example, or trash fish, could have a negative impact on pelagic wild stock, and that could also have a negative impact on pelagic, on the predators of this pelagic stock. However, feeding on this for this carnivorous fish have positive impacts on the artisanal fishermen that collect the feeds and has negative impacts on fisheries of the predatory species. So the interactions are quite complex, and often it's not easy to deal with all of them at the same time, but we have to keep them in mind. The most common impacts, we already talked about them. It's important, again, to mention that we have positive impacts, and then we have the different kinds of negative impacts. And we have this, the scales. Usually, the impacts on fisheries related to land and coastal habitat have a more local or watershed scale. Same thing with seeds and with the fisheries issues. But with the feeds, we are normally talking now, when we use fish meal, at a more global level. And therefore, this scale is much more difficult to manage, as I said, requires other approaches and partnerships. In most cases, as I said, the watershed scale, except for the use of fish meal, fish oil, is the most important one. And that's why it's very relevant to have some management schemes at that scale. Same situation with the most common impacts on aquaculture outputs on fisheries. We can also see the different scales. Some of them are broader, like the production, the biomass, income, labor could have impacts at the country level. While the excessive nutrient outputs can have usually a more local impact, and the escapes can again go at the larger scale. So there is a need to define the relevant management area or system for the ecosystem approach, taking care of fisheries issues. And as I said, this is a not trivial decision and requires a lot of stakeholder consultation, and it also requires to review our main objectives. The transboundary issues are very relevant to deal with. Again, we have to look very carefully at the overall objectives. In general, the overall objective should be to achieve net fish production at the lowest management scale and at the largest scale as appropriate, to achieve sustainable net fish production globally, and to enhance synergies, reducing conflicts. Some of the important recommendations here deal with governance and institutional needs. There is a need for new institutions and management schemes and coordination to look at fisheries and aquaculture as one fish production system. We are very used to, in many countries, to have institutions that work like separate boxes. One box looks at fisheries and one box looks at aquaculture. We really need to have a much closer link between the two, looking at one fish production system. We also need much greater efforts in fisheries and aquaculture, integrated research and knowledge building. Some of this was also discussed yesterday. We need to understand much better this interaction. We need to produce much better data. We also need more efforts in knowledge dissemination and capacity building regarding aquaculture and fisheries interaction. One point that it's away of my slide here is that the use of risk assessment is mandatory. We really need to have some sort of risk assessment both for the prioritization of issues and also to assess the potential impacts of any kind of introduction or movement or stocking or other kinds of interaction. We also need to use some of the code of practice and instruments that are already available. Other elements that are important to consider in developing an ecosystem approach to aquaculture implementation plan are the following. They must respond to operational objectives for the management area, addressing main fisheries and aquaculture issues. They need to respond to overarching national policies. We must recognize regional and country differences. And we can see this very clearly from some of the presentation. Is feed for the poor a priority? Is sustainability, can they both go at the same time, at the same level, with the same efforts. No food security issues in some places because they are not needed. I mean, they're already they don't need a food security because it's already there. And in those places, often sustainability is a priority. And in this regard, we see large differences between North America, Europe, and Asia and Africa. We have already been listening to this, that stock enhancement and culture-based fisheries is very, very important in many countries in Asia. While introducing new individuals and stock enhancement in Europe for some species can be regarded as something very, very dangerous. It's important, again, to consider the three principles. And as I mentioned before, it's very, very important to make sure that we do have risk assessments in place. There are several potential examples for the improved integration within fisheries and aquaculture. And we have had some experience already, for example, with shrimp farming and shrimp fisheries in Central America, in India, in the Pangasinan area in the Philippines, Lake Volta in Africa. So we could expand later on some of these potential initiatives. Zoning aquaculture areas with related management program areas and freeing areas for fisheries and mariculture parks in the Philippines, that is something Patrick has been working with. Another interesting example we have found is the stock enhancement to mitigate nutrient overloading from aquaculture, to reduce fish kills, culture stocks in cage, for example, to increase the output from cage from captured fisheries in the open waters and offer more food security and livelihoods, to reduce eutrophication and nutrient levels in the water bodies, returning it to almost original ecological status. In general, we see that in the next 10 years or in the next 50 years, there should be a much better integration between fisheries and aquaculture. Therefore, we should be able to see aquaculture and sport fishing and normal fishing and multitrophic aquaculture and enhancement of fisheries working together. But in order to do that, as I said, we believe we need improvement in institutions, in trying to develop and implement this strategy using risk assessment elements and improving much more the required research. Thank you.
Thank you, Doris, for sharing with us your experiences and thoughts on the application of this EAA for the sustainable aquaculture. With that, I would like to invite the panel members on stage. Dr. Sena. Again, Dr. Flores, Dr. Martinez, Dr. Miao, and Dr. Patrick White. Okay, we have perhaps maybe 30 minutes for discussion. Quickly, we take the first question there.
Daniel from Brazil. Thanks for the presentation. Regarding culture-based fisheries and stock enhancement, it has been mentioned this meeting that among the items discussed in the Bangkok Declaration, one of the last developed was regarding this topic. I would like only to add to discussion and hear from your feelings on the. I'm not particularly surprised that this item is mentioned not to be very well developed due to the so complicated, even though not impossible, is this this practice to be feasible. We would like to remember that. Perhaps it may work well in some small areas or some particular areas, especially on freshwater. From marine and estuarine species, is often difficult to use commercially hatchery reared seeds to stock enhancement due to aspects that have been mentioned in the expert panel before, like genetic, and also the animals not ever apt to cope with the wild environment. So this is my impression. I'm not a specialist in the area, just a curious, and what is have been I'm telling about how we have been following regarding the use of this potentially use of this hatchery, commercially hatchery reared individuals.
I guess what you said is what the previous speaker mentioned, or the previous panel mentioned, and what I said. In marine environments, of course, there are fears because we have not evaluated clearly the risk, and because the management of the potential impacts is more complicated. There's a need for much more research. I don't know if some of us...
That's true to some extent, but we must realize that Japan, for instance, releases so many millions of salmonids, and the basic catch is almost entirely dependent on the re-catch of the released animals. And some of the salmonid fisheries all over the world is partially based on the stocking of the... on stocking.
So when Doris introduced these culture-based fisheries, it's mainly we emphasize that aquaculture can have some, in different ways, can contribute into, have good relationship and contribute to the food fish production. And but when we talk about the actual practice of a CBA, then it's more species-specific and location-specific. It doesn't mean it's globally applicable everywhere, so you have to be very careful what species to be selected and what kind of environment condition, and also you need to look into the interaction between this released species, the seed, and the natural population. So that's the point. Thanks.
Thanks, Doris, for the presentation. It's very interesting. This is almost not quite a paradigm shift in our thinking. A lot of models and things you've showed really relate to the marine waters and the interface in that area. I think we'd be careful that we said that we had some very eloquent presentations over the last few days to say that most of the production is coming from the freshwater environment. And to have something like this that just says ecosystem in aquaculture, I think we need to define that a bit more. If we want to say ecosystem approach to marine aquaculture or coastal aquaculture, I think that might be a bit more appropriate. I know you mentioned the Lake Volta example as one, but there are few. And a few in the Philippines. So I just want to draw caution that I think we ought to be fairly careful as to how this will be interpreted. And I think countries might be equally concerned.
Thank you. Yes, of course, it's important to create the right impression and to clarify. As I said, we have these guidelines. And as I mentioned, when we talk about the ecosystem approach to aquaculture, the first step is to define the scale, the boundaries, and the definition of boundaries is crucial. So in every case, it could be a lake, it could be a coastal fjord, or if we are working in the open seas, it's a challenge. It's a real challenge, and we recognize that. Which are the boundaries? How do we work with those boundaries? But clearly, the first step is to define this ecosystem, and clearly we cannot work with the whole ecosystem, with the open sea. So we have to use operational boundaries.
Yes.
Ulf Wikström, Sweden. First, I want to thank Rosotto for the nice presentation. And then I'm wondering if I'm breaking etiquette by protesting against something that was said. If I understood correctly, one of the main objectives of the ecosystem approach to aquaculture is to maximize net production of food, or fish as food. To be consistent with what I said yesterday, if I understood correctly, then I want to object to this, because I think the most important objective is to ensure increased income for those who produce. unless you do that, you are likely to run into a door that is closed and suddenly find that the production falls and you don't know why. And I think this of remembering that increasing income is important, particularly in this part of the world, where there are a number of small-scale farmers who really are engaged in aquaculture, not because of any specific love of aquaculture, but because they want to increase their standard of living. And therefore, you must look at that, and you must ensure that over time, the aquaculturists improve their productivity, which means improve their output per unit of labor involved. And I think unless you remember that, you will suddenly find that if that is not assured, you will suddenly find that production drops, and you don't know why. Thank you, and I would like the panel's contradiction of what I'm saying. Thank you.
Sorry, very briefly. I don't see a contradiction. In reality, when we talk about net production of fish, we're always thinking about livelihoods and I guess, income. I don't see why there should be a contradiction. I guess I agree with you that income is what is going to provide food. So.
Yes, I do agree completely. But I would also say that the primary objective of an ecosystems approach or a systems approach, as I would say, is far beyond that. I think it has to do also with a holistic approach, a holistic management approach of a system. So sustainability includes the economic dimension, the social dimension, the ecological dimension, obviously. So it should also include the evaluating the impacts of other sectors within the same area. So it's far beyond that, but I do agree that income is the primary driver, at least in many, many regions of the world.
Okay, I think we agree to that. Amara? Okay, just 1 minute. Yeah.
Okay, so basically, when we talk about the ecosystem approach to aquaculture, we're not really only emphasize either production or economic return or this kind of. We basically talk about sustainable development in the long term. So we need to consider environmental sustainability, but also socioeconomic viability. So definitely, livelihood of the people, of the farmers, or the fishers involved are vitally important. So there are some very good cases in Thailand, also in China, that indicates unless you can really improve the livelihood of the people, there's no way you can really effectively implement the ecosystem approach. That's definitely very clear, so there's no contradiction here. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm Amara Yakupitege from the Asian Institute of Technology. In the same line with the fishing and wolf and all those ecosystem approach, because this has to be clarified, because there's a recommendation in the Phuket consensus to adopt this one widely. Therefore, this has to be clarified. By the way, thank you for a very nice presentation. Forgot that. And the ecosystem approach as a strategy is because there is so many hypotheses, like, for example, trash fish has negatively impact on predatory fishes. That is a hypothesis to me, the assumption to me. Therefore, when you put the strategy with a lot of assumption inside that, that's going to affect a lot of people negatively. Therefore, rather than ecosystem approach should be considered as a hypothesis, that we collect the data and improve it, rather than trying to impose into the people, as Krishna earlier said, because there's a lot of pressure aquaculture. Then in comparing the trash fish use in the Asia, which you got, is a bycatch. They cannot do anything about the most large amount of that has to be utilized. Aquaculture helped them getting rid of fisheries waste. Thank you.
Very short. I was not very clear about the question, but just to clarify that the strategy, as I said, is built based on very, very wide stakeholder participation. So it has to have ownership. It cannot be imposed.
I think that's a good suggestion, Amara, and maybe you should frame it in the form of a recommendation that what you're saying is there is more R&D needed and substantiate with quantitative data. So maybe that should be a recommendation coming from this floor. But only one thing I wish to clarify is not all trash fish. I don't like to use the word trash fish. It should be trash fish stroke low-valued fish. There is a fair amount of low-valued fish production or catching for aimed at total complete use in aquaculture. A good example is in Indonesia, certain areas where there are fishers whose sole livelihood is catching these low-valued fish to cater to the mariculture sector.
Yeah, João Ferreira from Portugal. I just wanted to re-emphasize the issue of looking at this kind of approach on a catchment level, because you highlighted the administrative issues. And in Europe, we've been struggling with this thing called the Water Framework Directive for about 10 years now, and it's fighting back. But in any case, looking at this, if it's not done in terms of a kind of river basin management plan type of approach, I don't think will work particularly well. I know that the examples that you gave were more focused on the coastal systems, but I know that the pond-based culture is not particularly prevalent in Europe, particularly when you compare it to Asia. But nevertheless, the consequences of pond culture with respect to effluents and with respect to the knock-on effect on the coastal zones do have huge relevance in terms of primary production and in terms of fisheries. And there are good examples of that from the agriculture sector, which should make that point very clearly. The pigs in the discharges to the Baltic would be a good example of that. The second point, which is just a brief comment, is that with respect to returning systems, particularly as regards eutrophication, to their pristine or their original ecological status, is something that I would steer away from in terms of recommendations. There's a good piece of work that was done by Carlos Duarte and Carstensen and others talking about the Peter Pan syndrome. It's a paper called Return to Neverland, with the issues there of shifting baselines. So I think it's too high a yardstick to put up for that.
Yes, the ecosystem approach is trying to look at the whole nutrient flow and the whole interrelated ecosystems from fresh water and related marine water bodies. And this is something that is difficult, and it is normally two different bodies that are administrating this, the freshwater and marine, and it's trying to bring it together. But it's trying to look at it as interrelated ecosystem and to try and plan and manage that related ecosystem, and particularly where transboundary issues make things more difficult. So it is a high goal, but it is a goal that we should try to go towards. The other point was that trying to minimize impact and on the environment and try to conserve biodiversity, conserve habitats. We realize that you can't go back to original state, but the aim is to try and minimize the impacts of aquaculture and to try and prevent over impact.
Thanks very much. I enjoyed the presentation and the panel's contributions a lot. I like the ecosystem approach very much. My question and a bit of a comment is, this is only half the story. How do we get the other side of the issue to adopt an ecosystem approach and start talking to us? And I have a recommendation, and that is at the next meeting like this, why don't we invite those fishers? And if you use the ecosystem approach in fresh waters, then you're going to have to invite the water management group. So I'd like the panel's perspectives or thoughts on how we can get the other half of the or the other three quarters of the sectors and the stakeholders involved and interested in us. Thanks very much.
Thank you, David. I think this is a very important point. And because the time we didn't talk more about what we are trying to do is to really develop an ecosystem approach to fish production or to, I don't want to discuss with with Ulf again on this, but in reality, there are efforts to integrate more the way to deal with both fisheries and aquaculture, and there are several projects already going on to look at both together. So ideally, we should be here with the fisheries side, and in most cases, the identification of issues, for example, is done with the local fishermen and the fish farmers. So the other side should also be here. So it's a good recommendation.
I believe Devin raised a very good point. So EAA is a new approach, it's a new strategy. It's a very beneficial. It's going to be very beneficial if we could have some opportunities for sharing of experience from, especially from the other side, from the farmers, from the local community. So I just like to inform here, recently, the Asian Pacific Fisheries Commission had a regional consultation forum. One of the important themes is the ecosystem approach. We were able to get a number of good cases of ecosystem approach to aquaculture implication in the different countries. There are some very, of course, it's not really perfectly as what we describe here. Anyway, at least it covers some very good aspect of EAA. So probably in the future, there's going to be a good chance for this kind of interaction, exchange, and things. Thanks.
And at the end, when this approach is implemented in the field, let's say, this will end up being a multi-objective, multi-criteria solution to a problem, because as we said as we saw in the third principle, the approach recommends to find that the sustainable development of aquaculture, taking into account other sectors, policies, and goals. And I was hearing again Ulf referring to the idea of income as the main goal for aquaculture development, and well, probably that's our goal, but that probably might not be the goal for other sectors involved in a more holistic solution of development and planning. So at the end, when we are suggesting this approach to be implemented, it would be, if we are really applying the third principle, it will be finding a common solution in terms of different policies and goals from different sectors.
I was quite interested in some of the panel's comments, in particular to try and encapsulate the ecosystems approach in terms of sustainable development, as Mew suggested, and also Alex's comments that we should be taking into account the three pillars, which is social, environmental, and economic. Are we saying, therefore, that the ecosystem approach equals sustainable development? Is that what you're really trying to tell? Is that the message? And is there a reason for asking this?
Yeah, of course. I mean, of course, the ecosystem approach as a strategy should lead us to sustainable development.
I would say ecosystem approach is a facet of sustainability. They're interactive.
I would like to give you a speed, add back, and then Ulf.
The greater part of what I was going to say was raised by Devin already very, very well. I found it very interesting, a recommendation flashed there to have fishery and aquaculture trying to merge again, or at least coordinated. And the history of it is that they used to be, and in some governments, there still are. It's quite interesting now that but then aquaculture became almost like not a separate one, but because it grew bigger and became more important in most governments, they created a strong aquaculture component or management mechanism. I'm saying this now because I find that interesting and I agree. So now we have the ecosystems approach to be another integrating mechanism for the two areas because they're in the same sector, still under fisheries. That's quite interesting. Our problem now is maybe how, because I'm raising this because in the end we talk about concepts, we discuss this. The implementation will have to be on the ground by the governments. Now you're suggesting that they merge again somehow or coordinated. They used to be until aquaculture became very powerful. And so now they're almost like separate entities. So I'm just concerned now with that implementing mechanism because that's where it will end up in the end. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Right, Ulf, and then you are next.
Thank you very much for giving me the word again. I want to say that I'm nothing against the ecosystem approach to aquaculture. I think it's a very good approach and it should be followed. My worry is that it's difficult to maximize and minimize several variables at the same time. You cannot maximize food, fish production, income, and minimize something else at the same time. You have to choose one that you maximize, and then you accommodate the others. So therefore, my plea is that the compass that steers the implementation of the ecosystem approach to aquaculture should be income for the farmers and the laborers concerned. That's the compass that you're aiming at. Then you accommodate the other to fit that when you implement the ecosystem approach to aquaculture. Thank you.
As I mentioned earlier in the presentation, in the implementation, one of the most important or perhaps the first step is to agree on a operational objective that should be also under some country policy. And for different countries and different regions, the conservation of biodiversity could be maybe a priority. In others, it could be feeding the poor. So I don't think that it's our role to tell, to provide this or to impose a certain policy or major goal. And it's very clear that you cannot maximize everything at the same time. That's why it's very important to identify the issues and to prioritize, to make a decision on what's more important to address first.
Just adding to a little bit to that, is that, again, we're talking about sustainability. And that includes, that should look into the interactions of all different sectors acting or benefiting from natural resources in a given ecosystem. So I think it provides tools or a way of having a holistic view of all these interactions in order to provide a guidance for policies, for management. And Christian, you were mentioning development. I think, yes, I mean, in especially in developing countries, I mean, the goal should be to maximize or optimize the use of resources in a sustainable manner. But that might not be the case in developed countries where development as such is not an issue. It's just, again, how to use in a very sustainable manner those resources by different users. It's like integrated coastal zone management, which how to make a harmonic use of resources by all stakeholders.
Okay, thanks, Chair. This is Yuan Xinhua from China. We have observed that EAA is a new constructed ecosystem. Actually, when we are stocking the seeds into the systems, actually we are changing the original ecosystems. So this is constructed our new models we are going to use. And also you mentioned the benefits for the people and also we are benefit for the food. Here, I want to share the experience in China. Also, we have some EAA and practice for some reservoirs or lakes. But in some places, and they also encounter some problems, especially for the ecological problems, because the system is not balanced. As you are stocking some economic spaces in the water, but after 5 years or less 10 years, the ecosystem was changed, and you can only get the survival by artificial intervention. Otherwise, the systems cannot be sustainable in the reservoir or in the lakes. So here, there is a comment. So while we are considering about the EAA, the ecosystems, the environmental or ecological aspects should be given a priority in the sustainable ability development for the future consideration. Thanks.
Surely, definitely, because when we talk about ecosystem approach, we talk about our aquaculture practices and the environment ecosystem. But probably in Doris' presentation, because the many things were focused on the aquaculture capture fisheries, but basically it's the whole ecosystem. It's not just the fish capture fisheries. Natural population is just one aspect. So we need to look into all these ecosystem functions and these kind of things, yes.
I mean, we are faced with the dilemma. Population is growing, we need food. Any farming system impacts on the ecosystem to one degree or the other. These are all measures of minimizing that impact so that we leave something for the future generations. That's all this is about. These are mechanisms of ensuring that the 9 billion people in 40 years' time will still have a way of meeting their food demands. So these are small facets of the whole thing.
Okay, I can take only one more question from Prof. Wahab, then we should break for tea, okay? Otherwise, we will not have any break.
Just I want to share one experience. In my country, large-scale stock enhancement program was done in mid-90s. It's a well-run funded project where the species like common carp were introduced in the floodplain. And the common carp production was all right, but at the end of the day, next season, when common carp was all harvested, the small fishes were eliminated because the common carp destroyed and disturbed the entire bottom layers of the small indigenous species on which the fishermen thrive. So it's a short-term goal that stocking and harvesting done, but long-term fishermen suffered and biodiversity reduced. So when the question coming of sea rinsing like Japan or elsewhere, that's a different thing. We rather not call trash fish. In our country, we used to sell weed fish. There is no fish which is weed or trash, rather low-valued SIS. My idea is a habitat-specific approach. One of the management approach is ecological approach in aquaculture. Not all aquaculture is can be ecological approach. However, should be tried to be as benign as possible. So it's rather habitat approach where applicable fisheries and aquaculture should be done in such a way that one helps others. My suggestion should be that in that case, concentration should be given on the local indigenous species, but all other species can be done in separate aquaculture system where ecological aquaculture is not our proposal. I think that is an addition to the thinking. Thank you very much.
I think, Wahab, when you say your country, most of the audience might not know which your country is. You are Bangladesh, and he was referring to the Bangladesh condition. Of course, we have made mistakes in stock enhancement in the past. We have to learn from those mistakes, and what you say is right. And have a more targeted approach. Those days, you know, fish were released very haphazardly. This is all what Doris was saying. We need a more concerted, more directed approach from now on. The science has grown, and we have to practice that science now.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I think we have had a very lively and interesting discussion. Please join me to thank the panel expert and panel members.